main eventing WrestleMania and holding that WWE championship up, winning in the main event as a bad guy, quote unquote bad guy.
Yeah.
Like that doesn't happen.
Never.
That's not supposed to happen, especially to a reality star.
Yeah.
I was on the real world. Mm-hmm. That's not supposed to happen to me. And
especially
I don't
when
remember
you're against
it.
The biggest good guy in the company.
Exactly. Yeah. And I don't remember it because I was concussed. And do I remember anything afterwards? No. And here's the best part that I think to tell you a little bit about my dad.
Mm-hmm.
So my parents come backstage. And now I don't remember this or I don't remember anything. They basically fill me in the next day of what happened. So my parents come backstage. My mom is backstage with me, I guess, in the trainer's room. And my mom said my dad left. And she thought that he just couldn't see me, you know, asking questions like that. But my dad comes up to me the next day and goes, look at all these pictures I got. I got a picture with The Rock. I got a picture with John Cena. Like, I won't let my dad backstage because he asks everyone for pictures. And I'm like, Dad, please don't annoy people while they're trying to do it. So he found it as an opportunity when I was concussed, when I was hurt, when I was injured, to find an opportunity to get the pictures then because he's backstage. Who cares about his kid, his little boy who's grew up, you know, you know, feeding and nurturing and doing all the following stuff.
Mike's not going to remember anyway.
He didn't remember anyway. You were asking he's like, you were asking the same question over and over again. It was a little annoying, to be completely honest with you.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
Hulk Hogan has definitely been that rocket fuel that TNA needed.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
That was The Miz on Sam Roberts' show talking about the WrestleMania 27 main event and his concussion, being backstage after the match, and how his father basically didn't give a crap about him. His father was more interested in going and getting photos and autographs from the actual big stars, like Rock and John Cena. Miz's dad is awesome. This is episode 304 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off for Sunday, December 8th. 2013. I am the Solid Monster. We have a lot of stuff, a lot of WWE news to get to here at the top of the show. But before we do, you can download this show every week on thesolidmonster.com, full episodes, as well as iTunes and Stitcher Radio. You can stream the show in there. And just a quick note here, for the people in iTunes, and I've gotten a lot of feedback from people who either through iTunes or Apple's podcast app, I guess on your iPhone, your iPad. People have had issues downloading and streaming the sound off. They've had to get it in other ways. I apologize for that. I know it's been an issue for a while now. And in talking with Apple people and talking with Podbean people, surprise, surprise, sounds like it's a Podbean issue. And we're trying to work it out. Their great solution is that if you've had problems, to unsubscribe from the show, I guess, and resubscribe. It's like bad cachet or something. I call BS on that one. It might be something you want to try. Again, I apologize if you are one of the people who have had issues. It's been incredibly frustrating to me for all the work I put into the show when I find out that people have tried to get it and they get some sort of playback error. So try that. Maybe if you're subscribed, unsubscribe and then resubscribe and you know, basically uninstall the podcast from, I guess, the podcast app, and then put it back and try again. See if that works, and let me know. In the meantime, I'm waiting for more word back from Podbean, and I'm sure they won't have anything terribly useful to say. But you can, nonetheless. I know a lot of people do still listen to the show that way, and you can get it that way. Stitcher Radio, we have a free app in the Google Play Store, so a lot of different ways to listen to the sound off. And if you want to make a PayPal donation to the show, you can do so on thesolidmonster.com. That's our main website. You'll see the donate box if you scroll down just a little bit. You can give the gift of PayPal this holiday season if you want to show your support and keep this podcast going, so I appreciate that. And one more note here. I know some of you are aware of the TV Tracks channel on YouTube. They've been a big supporter of the Sound Off for a number of years now. TV Tracks, a big fan of the show. And as a way to give back, this weekend I recorded a 90-minute Q&A exclusively for the listeners of the TV Tracks channel on YouTube. As I'm recording this, it's not yet up, but that Q&A should be going up any day now. And so it's basically like a bonus sound-off, all mailbag questions from people who wrote into me specifically from that channel. So if you want to find TV Tracks on YouTube, that video, if it's not already up by the time you're listening to this, it should be up very, very soon. ton of mailbag questions covering a whole bunch of different topics, including my class. If I could handpick my class for the WWE Hall of Fame in 2014, what it would be. All that and a ton of other stuff. So check it out and check out TV Track. Show your support for him because, again, he's been a very big supporter of this podcast for a while now. WWE announced some executive promotions in the company this week. Michelle Wilson, former chief marketing officer, is now their chief revenue and marketing officer. George Barrios, who used to be the CFO, is now chief strategy and financial officer. He'll take over the management of their day-to-day TV operations. He'll also be the one leading WWE's television rights negotiations, which are now ongoing. And along with the launch of this new network, which we're going to get to in a second, those two things, that's going to be probably the biggest story to follow for WWE heading into 2014. How things are settled with the TV rights fees and the success or failure of this network. And Stephanie McMahon, formerly the EVP of Creative, has been promoted to Chief Brand Officer. She will lead the company's marketing programs geared towards kids and moms. What that means is that Stephanie is no longer heading the creative department. And while the press release that WWE put out does not outright say this, it appears that Triple H is now assuming that role. And I say that because later in the announcement they put out, they say that this guy, Eddie Feldman, is the Senior Vice President of Creative Writing, is reporting to Paul Levesque, who is listed as the Executive Vice President of Talent and Live Events. Wait a minute, you mean to tell me he's not really the COO of the company? So you're going to tell me these matches are predetermined. I can't believe this. So that also is something that could be very interesting to follow, you know, with Stephanie now in charge of other things and Triple H in charge of creative. I mean, and let's be honest here, the buck still stops with Vince McMahon. He's still the end-all, be-all when it comes to that. Even if it's not his idea, nothing goes through without his okay. But if Triple H is the head of creative, and he's now leading the creative charge there, will we see a creative shift in WWE? You know, the way things have been going lately, they're going to be heading into WrestleMania season soon. I sure hope that somebody sees fit to shake things up a little bit. Once TLC passes, you've got Royal Rumble next. Let's hope they have some good ideas for where they want to take things. And as far as Triple H goes, he's done a great job with developmental so far. You know, NXT is one of the bright spots in the company, the new Performance Center. That was his brainchild. They spent millions of dollars on that. That's his baby. And so that's all part of his legacy. But now with creative, you know, we may start to see glimpses of what direction the company may be going in once Vince McMahon is out of the picture. I don't think we're going to get a full sense of Triple H's vision until Vince is gone. Either he retires or he dies, you know, whatever it is. But as long as he's in there, he's still the boss. You can have an idea for a storyline that you think is going to light the world on fire, but if Vince craps all over it or he changes his mind, as he's known to do, then it doesn't mean anything. So I don't know that we'll really truly have a sense of how Triple H is going to do in that role until that day comes. But we may start to see glimpses of it, and I really hope. You know, Triple H is an old-school guy. Part of me loves to imagine there being a day that he's handed the keys to the castle and just blows it up and starts incorporating elements into the show that it used to have, but they've gotten away from in recent years. And he starts to bring some of that back. You know, Triple H has never booked the territory before, but he's been a student of wrestling, I think, for pretty much his entire life. He's had years now of hands-on experience with how things work behind the scenes. Vince has been bringing him up to speed on how production works and merchandising and creative, all of these different things. And, you know, it doesn't mean you're going to be a creative genius, but you hope he can at least surround himself with wrestling people who know wrestling. Maybe get away from scripting every little thing to death, all that kind of stuff. I have hope. Let's just put it that way. I have hope. So this may be the first step towards that. WrestleMania 31 in the news. There may be an announcement coming on Tuesday that WWE is going to announce WrestleMania in 2015 is going to be taking place at the new Levi Stadium in Santa Clara, California, future home of the San Francisco 49ers. It's such a new stadium, it's not even done yet. I don't think it officially opens until the next NFL seasons, or probably next summer is when the stadium opens. And I guess the idea would be to do the Hall of Fame and Monday Night Raw the night after WrestleMania at the SAP Center in San Jose. So that whole Bay Area, it looks like they're getting WrestleMania in 2015, the first Bay Area WrestleMania ever. They've had Mania in Los Angeles before, but that doesn't count. That's not the Bay Area. So it looks like that's pretty much confirmed at this point. We'll know on Tuesday. There's a press conference scheduled at the Santa Clara Convention Center, and we will know more at that point. And there's also rumors that they're going to be announcing the location for WrestleMania 32 in the very near future as well. So it looks like they may be shifting philosophy. You know, in the past, they wouldn't say a word. They would wait as long as they could. WrestleMania would come, and then usually during the pay-per-view, there'd be some sort of hype video promoting the location for the following year. Now it looks like maybe they're getting away from that, and they're going to start announcing multiple locations years in advance, maybe to build up excitement for it. So it looks like we know WrestleMania 31. We may know 32 very soon as well. I know Dallas has been rumored for another Texas WrestleMania. All the people out there holding out hope for a UK WrestleMania, I wouldn't hold my breath on that one. I think there's a much better chance that the UK gets something like SummerSlam maybe in 2015. Because I think 2014, the big rumor is that if they take SummerSlam away from Los Angeles, it may come to Madison Square Garden, which if it does, would be great. SummerSlam is the last of the big four pay-per-views I still haven't been to. I've been to a Rumble, I've been to Mania a couple of times, Survivor Series, so I wouldn't mind hitting up a SummerSlam one of these years, but I would not hold out hope for a UK WrestleMania anytime soon. And that takes us to the WWE Network. This was another big story this week. Now, let me preface this by saying that this report that I'm going to get into here, this comes from WrestleZone.com. WrestleZone has been hit or miss. They've broken some stories before, and at other times they've broken news that has not necessarily come to fruition, although I guess you could say the same thing about any wrestling website. So this hasn't been anything broken by a major site like The Observer, The Torch, PW Insider. So how accurate this report is, we don't know. There's a lot of very specific details in this report that lead me to believe that there probably is a lot of legitimacy to this, which is why I'm bringing it up here on my show. Now, before I get to that, WWE, they have started handing out invitations to media members for what they are calling a special event on January 8th, that's a Wednesday, at the Wynn Hotel in Las Vegas. Now, during that week is the International Consumer Electronics Show, which is a big deal. It's a big expo out there in Vegas. And they're timing this to make this major announcement, whatever it is, right in the middle of CES, which is telling. And the media invite says that Vince McMahon will be in attendance. And I think that's key because Vince does not always attend events like this anymore. He'll send Triple H, he'll send Stephanie, George Barrios, other executives in the company. This invite specifically says Vince McMahon will be there. So you know, whatever it is, it's got to be a big deal. And it's funny, you know, when I heard about this invite going out, you know, it's like Vince McMahon is like the new Steve Jobs or Tim Cook of Apple. I guess for pro wrestling, he would be the equivalent. He's about as close as those guys, you know, as we've gotten wrestling right now. So this all ties into the network because I'm 99% sure whatever they're announcing on January 8th, it's going to have to do with the network. And that takes me back to WrestleZone, their report on Thursday, that the WWE Network is launching on February 24th. Now, that date was first floated by PW Insider a few months ago. It looks like that probably is going to be the date. That date is the day after the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. So that's February 24th. It looks like the network may officially launch. And according to this report, it will be available online only on all major connected devices. So not just your computer, but your iPhone, your iPad, tablets. I mean, All of your devices that you can get streaming content, streaming video, it should be available on those devices. It will not be a proper, traditional cable channel. And it makes sense, too. It would explain why we haven't heard of a single confirmed cable provider agreeing to carry the network. You would think that even if they wanted it kept under wraps, that at least one of them would leak out. There's never been a report that a Cablevision or a Time Warner Cable or Rogers Cable, whatever these cable companies are, We haven't heard that even a single one of them have signed on to carry this supposed new network. And so if it was going to be online only, you know, UFC just announced that they're launching a new digital, I guess, online only channel themselves. They're also launching their own network online only. I think a lot of people realize the future is in digital. The future is online. Cable TV, a lot of people are giving up cable. They're not necessarily giving up TV. They're just getting their TV in other ways. And so maybe this is WWE recognizing, A, we couldn't get a cable provider or we couldn't get as many as we wanted to agree to carry a channel, number one. And number two, you know, say what you want to about WWE and their, you know, the annoying videos about how to install their app and, you know, tweeting and all this other stuff. But they're on the cutting edge of this stuff. They try to be, you know, whatever the new hot thing is, they try to be, you know, into that and on top of that. And it's smart, you know, from a company perspective, it's a smart thing for them to do. So, online only. It'll be a 24/7 stream. So there'll be content like you would get on any network, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Plus, an on-demand library that includes every single episode of Monday Night Raw, every single episode of SmackDown, and every pay-per-view to date. Available on demand. $10 a month is the fee that the WrestleZone report quoted, is what the network would be. You pay $60 up front when the network first launches for the first 6 months. As part of that first 6 months, you get WrestleMania 30 and all subsequent monthly pay-per-views after that. So basically, you pay $60, you get WrestleMania, which you would probably pay $60 for anyway, or 50. You get every other pay-per-view every month thereafter. After the first 6 months are up, you only pay $10 a month for your subscription. And, you know, I know Hulu Plus is like $7.99 a month, you know, but the content you're getting with this network, including the pay-per-views, you know, $9.99, if that's the price, that seems like a steal to me. That seems low, if anything. And the key here is that when it comes to pay-per-views, the cable companies always get their cut. WWE, I think traditionally they end up getting something like 20 or 30%. So it's not like if WrestleMania does gangbuster numbers, they get all that money. All things considered, WWE gets a very small sliver of that because the cable companies get their cut, and then when WWE gets their cut, they then have to figure out, okay, how much do we have to pay talent, and all these different things go into it. If they're running their own network and they're airing these pay-per-views on that network, in theory, you're cutting out the middleman, and you're getting the whole pie to yourself. So that's something to keep in mind also as far as that pay-per-view stuff is concerned. That's a key thing. You offer the pay-per-views, including WrestleMania, up front so that you get as many subscribers from the start as you possibly can. They need this thing to be a success. And when they launch, they need this launch to be successful. You hope that over time you'll build your subscriber base, but they're going to want as many people as possible in that first month to sign up for that network. And I think if WrestleMania is part of it, that's a big, big lure for a lot of people right there. Are there people who are going to be willing to subscribe to the network just to get WrestleMania and to get these pay-per-views? And if they do that, are they then going to turn around a few months later and just cancel their subscription, or are they going to stick with it? I think that's one of the key questions going forward. I would imagine that this network would be available through all the major streaming devices, PlayStation, Xbox, Roku, Apple TV, all that stuff. So it would make more sense then that this mystery announcement next month in Vegas, you know, it's taking place at the Consumer Electronics Show. So they can announce, hey, it's going to be available for all these different apps, and everything seems to make sense. So I read the report. It sounds pretty legit to me. We'll know in due time whether or not it is or it isn't. I know Dave Meltzer says that WWE has been working with MLB.TV on this project, which would lend even more credence to it being online only. I think that's a good sign. You know, I have friends who use or have in the past used MLB.TV to watch their baseball games, and I've never heard of them having any major streaming problems. You know, when WWE had a stream for WrestleMania earlier this year, it was a complete disaster. I mean, we joke about Ring of Honor and all their iPay-per-view problems, but even WWE is not immune to it. And WrestleMania was just a big disaster for them. You had like 20,000 people who tried to watch WrestleMania as an iPay-per-view, and it didn't work. The stream didn't work. They had nothing but problems. So the fact that they're working with an outfit like MLB.TV to try to get this down and try to make sure that everything goes swimmingly, I think that's a good sign. And I don't know how many of you may have used MLB.TV. I have not personally, but just based on what I've heard, I think that's a good sign. Now, the last thing I want to get to here as far as this network goes, how might this affect piracy? I had some people tweet me and bring that up. I would argue it will help cut down on piracy. I think that for the content they're providing, if all of this that we've heard is true, the pay-per-views, any episode of Raw on demand, any episode of SmackDown on demand, all that stuff, And the $10 a month price point, if that's, you know, if it's a quality stream, let's assume it's high quality HD stuff, I really think that people will pay. I do. There are a ton of streaming services these days that a lot of young people pay for. Pandora, Spotify, Netflix, Hulu. You know, if you give people the quality they're looking for in a way that's easy to deliver to their phone, their iPad, whatever, and they don't have to go searching for it and downloading a giant file and hit up the Pirate Bay or whatever, I do think they'll pay for it. It won't wipe out piracy. Okay, that's never going to happen. But it's not like it was when Napster first became a big thing, you know, over a decade ago. You didn't have services like this back then. That's part of the reason why people have navigated to services like Napster and, you know, what was it, Kazaa back in the day, and LimeWire and all that. You didn't have these streaming services that we have today. Now it's a lot easier. You just pay a small fee, and you just get the content delivered to you, and you don't have to worry about going out and searching for it. So that'll be another interesting story to follow, how it's going to affect people pirating the pay-per-views and all of their content. I don't think it's going to hurt. If anything, I think this may help. This Monday in Seattle, WWE is bringing back the Slammy Awards. I can't think of a better time to do a three-hour Slammy show than on the go-home show to your pay-per-view. I'm not quite sure why they didn't hold off on this for another week. But we're getting the Slammies. Jerry Lawler and Booker T will host. So I want to go through some of the categories here. I know the Slammies don't mean anything, but I thought it would be fun just to go through some of the categories that have been announced. And in some cases, I have here the actual nominees, which are comical. And I'll give my thoughts on, quite frankly, who I think should win a Slammy Award. So they're doing Superstar of the Year. That's always the biggest category that they do. That award is being presented by Shawn Michaels. They're bringing in a lot of guys. Some legends. Shawn, Brett, the Outlaws. Bunch of people. So the Superstar of the Year is going to be presented by Shawn Michaels. The nominees are Daniel Bryan, John Cena, CM Punk, Randy Orton, and Brock Lesnar. And this is interesting because I think, you know, again, if you look at this as a legitimate award, who deserves to be Superstar of the Year in 2013 for WWE, you can make an argument, I think, for three guys. Daniel Bryan, John Cena, or CM Punk. Daniel Bryan, for obvious reasons, he broke out of the pack this year, truly became a main event player, at least for a while, got a clean win over John Cena at SummerSlam. Not too many people can say, especially other babyfaces, can say that they got a clean one-on-one win over John Cena. The Rock is one of them. I guess he'd be one of the more recent ones. But there aren't very many people. Like Hogan back in the day during the Hulkamania era, very few people got clean wins over Hogan. The Warrior is one. I can't even think of any after that. So that tells you something right there. The thing with Daniel Bryan is, if Bryan wins the award for Superstar of the Year, with Shawn Michaels there as the presenter, I wonder if they might do an angle. You know, there were rumors that maybe Shawn would come back and wrestle Bryan at WrestleMania. I don't believe those rumors. I just don't. I don't believe them. I think Shawn is done. I don't think he's ever wrestling again. Maybe next year will come, and I'll look like a fool for saying that. But I honestly think he's telling the truth when he says, I'm done, I'm not wrestling. But if the idea is to do something, this would make sense as the kickoff point for it. Shawn's there presenting the award. Bryan wins. They have a very awkward confrontation on stage because the last time they were together, Shawn was locked in the Yes Lock, tapping out in the middle of the ring. So if they're going to do an angle to set something up at WrestleMania, it's got to be done here. If there's nothing done on this Raw show, then I don't think there's going to be a match between Bryan and Michaels. I don't think there's going to be a match anyway. But we'll see. This would be a good time for them to do something. For John Cena, I hate to say this, but if you really look at it, and I could see them doing this, John Cena should be Superstar of the Year. He won the Royal Rumble. He beat The Rock for the championship at WrestleMania. He put Daniel Bryan over clean at SummerSlam. He came back and won the World Championship. And now he's wrestling in a unification match at TLC. So when you take all of those things, if you really look at his year, as crappy a year as WWE said, you know, in storyline, John Cena had, plus he got divorced, so it kind of was a crappy year for him. 2013 was the opposite, right? He found true love in Nikki Bella. Oh, good for him. But all these other things, the Rumble, Mania, the world title, now the unification, you know, in past years, it's been revolting to me the way they've, you know, John Cena, Superstar of the Year. He's probably won it like 18 times already. I exaggerate, but not by much. But this year, I think you could really make the argument that the guy's Superstar of the Year. Daniel Bryan's had a lot of success, but his real fame and success this year has come in the last few months. And now he's cooled off in terms of how they're booking him. He certainly hasn't cooled off in terms of popularity. But Cena's been, you know, positioned up top all year. He's had all these great successes in 2013. I think John Cena is Superstar of the Year. You've got CM Punk. You can make an argument for Punk as well. He started the year as WWE Champion. He had a great match with Undertaker at WrestleMania 29. He came back after a couple of months off and had a great match with Chris Jericho at Payback. He had a great match with Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. From a purely great match perspective, I think Punk may be the MVP of the year in WWE. Not to mention that Raw match he had with Cena early in the year. So you can make a valid argument for any of those three. But if I had to give the nod, I'd probably give the nod to John Cena. And that's just me being honest. You know, again, I'm not the biggest fan of the way they shove Cena down people's throats. I'm not the biggest fan of the guy when it comes to his hokey promos and all that kind of stuff. But he kind of had a great year. I'm just saying. Extreme Moment of the Year is going to be presented by Mick Foley. I guess their candidates are The Shield, triple powerbombing The Undertaker on SmackDown, Ryback spearing John Cena through an LED light at Extreme Rules, CM Punk's revenge on Paul Heyman at Hell in a Cell, and the Wyatts crushing Kane at SummerSlam. Oh, how extreme. If by extreme they mean extremely crappy, then yes, I would give that the Slammy Award. I don't even know what another extreme moment would be, so I don't have any... I don't care. Those are the nominees. Insult of the Year is going to be presented by The Miz, appropriately enough. I don't know what the nominees are. I didn't look it up, but my pick is Divas Musical Chairs. Find me a more insulting segment this year than Diva. Well, actually, I guess the Miz TV with Strahan was pretty bad. That'd be a close number two. I still go with Divas Musical Chairs. I'm sure that's not one of the nominees. I can almost guarantee if I look it up right now, that's not listed, but that should be. That's your winner right there. Double Cross of the Year is going to be presented by The Shield. Hopefully not a foreshadowing of their own breakup or Double Cross that happens on the show. Triple H and Daniel Bryan at SummerSlam is one nominee. Shawn Michaels and Daniel Bryan at Hell in a Cell. Mark Henry and John Cena retirement angle. Paul Heyman screwing CM Punk at Money in the Bank. I don't see how this can be anything other than Mark Henry's phony retirement on Raw. That has to win. I mean, if there's any legitimacy to this and all. And supposedly the fans are voting on this. So if the voting is on the up and up, I know sometimes the WWE fans can be a little wonky in their voting, but I don't see how anything other than this can win. That segment was awesome. That segment, it just reinvigorated the Mark Henry character. He was so freaking awesome. That was probably the best thing he ever did in the 15 years or 16 years he's been in this company. So my vote goes to Mark Henry on that. This is awesome. Moment of the Year is going to be presented by Christian. So yes, Christian is in fact alive. He is alive, and the nominees are Ziggler cashing in Money in the Bank on Raw, Daniel Bryan winning the championship from Randy Orton at Night of Champions. He really didn't, though. Big Show knocking out Triple H and Kofi Kingston hopping on a chair to stave off elimination in the Royal Rumble match. Ziggler cashing in Money in the Bank on Raw the night after WrestleMania. Again, it seems like a no-brainer to me. I was in the building that night. I've been part of very few reactions as loud and passionate as that one. And that was just a really cool moment, which makes it more sad to see, you know, his rapid descent in the months since then. But if you ignore that, and if we're focusing on a moment, I'd say Ziggler cashing in Money in the Bank. I would throw the return of Goldust in there, too, just as a, you know, little consideration there. Not that it should win. But I think, and we're not talking about a moment per se, but I just think the whole Dustin Rhodes comeback in WWE, and I guess they have comeback of the year. I think it's one of the .com only awards they're giving out. But that's a great story. And that's really been awesome to follow, is the return of Goldust. He's in great shape. He's motivated. He's working with all the newer guys. He's working with his brother. He's great. And it's really been cool and very refreshing to see. That's pretty awesome also. Total Diva of the Year is going to be presented by Eve Torres. They're bringing Eve back. No, this does not mean that Eve is back. She's back for one night. I had a few people wondering if that meant she was coming back to feud with AJ. She is not. So enjoy her while she lasts. She's only going to last one night, probably one segment. So she'll be there to present Total Diva of the Year. The nominees are AJ Lee, Caitlyn, the Funkadactyls, the Bella Twins, Natalya, and yes, Eva Marie. Eva Marie is up for a Slammy Award for Diva of the Year. Total Diva of the Year. As long as Eva Marie doesn't win, or the Bellas. I guess the Bellas, I don't know. The way they positioned the Bellas, I could easily see them winning. But I'll still go with AJ Lee. She's still the best thing about that whole division. LOL Moment of the Year, presented by the New Age Outlaws. We have the Rock concert at the 20th anniversary of Raw. Vicky Guerrero being fired as Raw GM. Titus O'Neil throwing up on JBL, Cole, and Zeb Coulter on SmackDown. And the great Khali and Jinder Mahal trying to charm Santino's Cobra on SmackDown. My LOL Moment of the Year isn't even listed here. The LOL Moment of the Year is Brodus Clay referring to himself as a main eventer 2 weeks ago on SmackDown. That's the LOL Moment of the Year. Match of the Year, presented by Bret the Hitman Hart. Now, this is the category that just made me laugh out loud. The nominees for Match of the Year, they only have four. The Undertaker against CM Punk at WrestleMania 29, which is valid, right? I could see that. John Cena against The Rock at WrestleMania 29, which has no business being on this list. Triple H against Brock Lesnar at Extreme Rules, which also has no business being on here. Not that it was a bad match, but Match of the Year, I don't think so. And Cody Rhodes and Goldust against The Shield at Battleground, which absolutely deserves to be on this list. So two of the four are valid options, but they left so many others off. It's comical, and it's comical to me. You had to get a Triple H match in there, right? We've had how many Triple H matches this year? Two? Neither of which have been that great, but you had to get the one Triple H match on there. You just had to. So I decided to put my own list together. This is my list of what I believe to be the matches of the year in WWE in 2013. I have nine total. I didn't expect them to make a list of nine choices, but I put my own together. This is my list of what I think are the nine best matches in WWE this year, and then I'll get into what my pick would be. John Cena and CM Punk on Raw. They have great chemistry. Cena and Punk have had a lot of great matches together. Their match on Raw back on February 25th to determine the number one contender for the title at WrestleMania was no different. It was a great match. That was the one with the pile driver spot that Vince apparently flipped out about. That deserved to be on that list. Undertaker CM Punk at WrestleMania 29, I agree with. That was also a very enjoyable match. CM Punk and Chris Jericho at Payback, another great one. And Punk had just been off for 2 months with an injury. This was his first match back, and he went out there, and he and Jericho just tore the house down. And apparently, they didn't even speak much before the match. Like, a few minutes before, they literally talked about a couple of things, and they just went out there, and they winged it, and it was great. The Shield against the Usos. Money in the Bank kickoff. And really, any Shield six-man this year deserves to be on the list. But they all kind of cancel each other out. I can't really pick one over the other. But I put this match on there. This is a personal favorite of mine. I was in Philadelphia for Money in the Bank. I saw this match live, the crowd reaction. The match itself, it was exciting. It was great. And I just love the fact that these guys were relegated to the pre-show. And, I like to think it was their way of just sticking it to WWE and just saying, top that. Some people may disagree with me on this, but I thought that was a terrific match. Daniel Bryan and Antonio Cesaro on Raw. Remember that Raw back in July when Bryan had to run the gauntlet against three guys? I think he fought Swagger first. Cesaro was second. I don't remember who was third. The match with Cesaro was great. It was awesome. They had some great spots. The fans were into it. I mean, everything about that match that you look for in a great match, it had. It was brutal. It was stiff. It was believable. And it was long. For a gauntlet, the first match with Swagger, I think Brian Swagger went like 3 or 4 minutes. So I remember, when Cesaro came up to the plate, I thought, okay, this is going to be great, but I don't know how much time they're going to give them. I think the match was like 17 minutes or something like that. That absolutely deserves to be on the list. CM Punk and Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. John Cena and Daniel Bryan at SummerSlam. I can't believe neither one of those matches are on WWE's list. How do you not include at least one of those two matches on your Match of the Year list? I don't understand that. How is that even possible? Unless the fix is in, and they just didn't want the fans to... Oh, the fix probably is in, now that I think about it. They just didn't want it on there. Cody and Goldust against The Shield at Battleground. Too bad nobody saw it, based on the Battleground buy rate. And finally, I put on my list Punk, Brian, Cody, Goldust, and the Usos against The Shield and the Wyatt family on Raw back on November 18th. I think that was that Raw country show. It was Survivor Series for free on Monday Night Raw. I love that match. I thought that was a great match. That's my personal list. Every single one of those matches deserves a spot on that list. Maybe I missed a few, but those are the key ones for me. And if I had to narrow it down to one, what is the match of the year in WWE? It's hard to do. It's a lot of great stuff here. I went back and forth between the two matches at SummerSlam, and I got to give the edge to Punk and Lesnar. I think CM Punk and Brock Lesnar had the match of the year in WWE. Brian Punk, very close, but I got to go with Punk and Lesnar. I think they're number one. Trending now, hashtag of the year is another award. I don't even know what that means. I think the nominees, let me see here. They posted some new nominees online. Okay, here we go. The Trending Now hashtag of the year award presented by the Rhodes Brothers. Every one of these things, by the way, has a hashtag before it. Believe in the Shield, Follow the Buzzards, Best for Business, and We the People. So I don't even care enough to make a prediction on that. I guess I'd just say Best for Business just because it kind of took off. And I know, like, even in our Facebook group, there's like, these images that people will post. You know, your post is bad for business, and I get a chuckle out of that. So anyway, the Beard of the Year, which makes me think that might be their way of getting Daniel Bryan a Slammy without making him Superstar of the Year so John Cena can win it. And there's a Fan Participation of the Year award. I think that's being presented by the Primetime Players. They listed Fandangoing, Yes, 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 What's Up, and Let's Go Cena, Cena Sucks. Those are the nominees. I vote for Noah Marks Wave the night after WrestleMania 29. He started that thing, and that was great. He gets my vote. Give Noah a Slammy. And then there's Breakout Star of the Year. Breakout Star of the Year, to me, it's a shoo-in. Mrs. Dad. How can you vote for anybody else? Mrs. Dad is the Breakout Star of the Year in WWE for 2013. Period. End of story. Those are your Slammy categories. Let's backtrack now and just talk a little bit about Raw from this past Monday night. Raw was live in Oklahoma City, and it did its lowest rating of the year. 3.5 million viewers. They dropped steadily over each of its 3 hours. You'd have to go back to October of 2012 to find a non-holiday edition of Raw that did a worse number. This, on the heels of the Battleground pay-per-view I alluded to before, doing the second or third worst pay-per-view number in company history. 87,000 domestic buys. This network can't come soon enough. The major stories on Raw this past Monday were the title unification. They had the contract signing for it. And Sin Cara, of all things. Sin Cara and the title unification were the two big stories coming out of this show. They really, really went out of their way to make you think you're getting a title unification to TLC. They even used the magic word I talked about last week, guarantee. They have guaranteed a new single unified champion. They had no other choice. After all those screwy pay-per-view finishes since SummerSlam, they couldn't afford another one. They had to go out there and promise the people, look, we're not going to fuck you over this time. We're actually going to give you a winner. And I think we are. I think we are going to get a unified champion now that they've gone and they've used the magic word. And I think that man will probably be Randy Orton. And it makes me wonder if that even was the original plan when they conceived of this whole thing. They never used the word unification in week one. If you remember when they made the initial announcement, the fans started complaining, oh, they're probably going to have each of them pull down a belt and it'll be another fuck finish. And, you know, maybe that pressured them into the unification stuff. It's possible. I'm glad it's happening. They don't need two titles. I'm all for them unifying the Intercontinental and U.S. titles, too, while they're at it. Go ahead and merge the two of those. I can't even remember the last time Dean Ambrose defended his title. Unify those into one Intercontinental title. You want to know how to boost the prestige of the Intercontinental belt? I get mailbag questions all the time about this. That's how you do it. One single secondary belt. That, and you actually defended at WrestleMania. I still can't believe they went like 8 years. It was like 7 or 8 years they went without a single Intercontinental title defense at WrestleMania. Think about how absurd that is. Speaking of the Intercontinental title, Damian Sandow beat Dolph Ziggler to become the number one contender. They had Big E Langston out there on commentary. I like Big E. I think he's a good talker. I'll just chalk it up to nerves this week, but he was not very good here. I thought he was actually pretty poor in this spot on commentary. He had a bad night. It happens. He wasn't any worse than Cole and Lawler and JBL this week. I I like those three guys as a trio. I do. I happen to like them as a three-man announce booth, but the announcing has gotten to the point where it's just really distracting, like in every single match. Half the time, they don't even pay attention to what's going on in the ring. They're cracking jokes for their own amusement. They're laughing at stuff. In doses, that's fine. I mean, you know, Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan would do that back in the day. Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler would do that from time to time when they were at their peak, but not 80% of the show. So they gotta cool it on that. Natalya and the Bellas beat AJ Lee, Tamina, and Summer Rae when Natalya rolled up AJ for the surprise pin. This came after AJ Lee spent 98% of the match skipping around the ring. And then when she lost, she didn't care. She grabbed her belt, and she skipped away. And the Divas stopwatch had this at 4 minutes 25 seconds, which is actually pretty good by Divas standards. Summer Rae, just like Big E, I'm a fan of hers. I think she's actually a good wrestler. I think she'll get better. This was not her best night. I have seen much better from Summer Rae. Wade Barrett is back. He is doing his Bad News Barrett gimmick from the JBL and Cole YouTube show. I talked about it back when he first started doing it many months ago. I thought it was great. Back in the day, I thought it was great. I think I even suggested that they bring it to TV. I said this would be something to get Wade Barrett a spot back on TV. And it's kind of entertaining. It's funny. Well, I was wrong. And the reason I was wrong is because I made the cardinal mistake of forgetting that on the JBL and Cole show, as many of their YouTube shows, they don't have the writers scripting stuff for guys like they do on TV. They have more creative freedom. So it was actually funny and entertaining. This was not funny, nor was it entertaining. This was watered-down, unfunny garbage. This was the unfunny version of Bad News Barrett, and it sucked. I liked it when there was a show-long storyline on the YouTube show. These YouTube shows are like 5 minutes, but they would have some sort of story or theme that would, you know, dominate every episode. And then Wade Barrett would pop up out of nowhere, and he would deliver bad news to somebody. Or he'd call their cell phone, and they'd pick up, and then you'd see a split screen. And I remember one episode where Barrett was at home, I think, petting his cat like an evil villain. You know, and he would deliver bad news to that person. This, what we saw on TV this week on Raw and SmackDown, this is just him standing at a podium, like the anonymous Raw general manager, and delivering dumb lines. I'll never understand how a company that produces a show like NXT, and even some of their YouTube stuff, can see how good that stuff can be, and yet they refuse to break from their formula when it comes to TV. It's incredible to me. The only bad news here is for Wade Barrett's career if they don't tweak this gimmick. Daniel Bryan is alive and well. You'll be happy to know. He was abducted the week before by the Wyatt family. And then Triple H told us on WWE.com they found him. He's okay. He was in the trunk of a car in a parking lot somewhere, a little disoriented, but otherwise he was fine. And then if you remember last week on SmackDown, they acted like he was still missing. And CM Punk had no idea where Bryan was. And then here on Raw, he's back, showing no ill effects whatsoever. Vince McMahon is a maniac. He's a maniac. Can't make up his mind. Bryan had a really long match with Eric Rowan, who was the least experienced member of the Wyatt clan. And miraculously, it wasn't bad. It wasn't great, but it wasn't bad. Crowd was very quiet for it. But I thought it was, you know, a perfectly fine big guy beats up the smaller guy wrestling match. He did a lot of power moves. Bryan took a beating in this match, but he fought his way back, and he won with WWE's favorite finish, the roll-up. Best part of this whole thing was Bray Wyatt's promo on the Titantron. I thought after the match, he told Harper and Rowan, don't hurt him, back off. He talked about how he can relate to Daniel Bryan, how they see him as, you know, the people see him as nothing more than a circus clown, but Bray Wyatt sees a monster in him. And he said, together, they can take over the world. Bray Wyatt was tremendous here. This was a great promo. This guy can be in movies with that character. He's that good. I still don't think Bryan's joining, or if he does, it's going to be a ruse. Just my opinion. Hunico Kara beat Alberto Del Rio. Yes, Hunico, back under the Sin Cara mask. They brought him back. This was ridiculous. So Sin Cara's back on Raw for the first time in like months, and I immediately think to myself, something's different about him. He seems a little bit bigger. He's not moving quite as fast as the real Sin Cara does traditionally. And he seemed to have a giant shoulder tattoo that I don't remember the old Sin Cara having. So all of these thoughts are running through my head. And then he beats Del Rio, the same man who only a few weeks ago was holding the World Heavyweight title wrestling John Cena. He now gets beaten by Sin Cara, who's made of glass and hasn't been on television in like 6 months. So that set off some alarm bells right there. And then we've come to find out it was Hunico under the mask. I wasn't sure, but apparently it was. And some wrestling websites reached out to WWE. They had to issue a statement. Their statement said, "The original performer behind the Sin Cara mask remains under contract to WWE. We will continue to invest in the character and retain it as part of WWE programming." Now, the real Sin Cara, whose name is so long I'm not going to bother pronouncing it here, he tweeted during the show. In fact, I think it was either during the match or as soon as the match ended, the real Sin Cara tweeted that he was, I think, at a restaurant in Mexico. Completely blowing the lid off this. Almost like a nice giant FU to WWE. So it certainly doesn't seem like he's on the best of terms with the company. And he may be under contract to them right now. But I think if his contract runs out in a few months, I don't think he has a long-term future in this company. Let's just leave it at that. The Shield beat Cody Rhodes, Goldust, and The Big Show. Really fun match. I think it would be news at this point if The Shield had a match that wasn't great. Rollins pinned Goldust. By the way, nice to see Cody and Goldust harbor no ill will towards Big Show for knocking out their 68-year-old father. After the match, CM Punk was backstage with Renee Young talking about being pretty and gay. Then he talked about his handicap match with The Shield. At TLC, he admitted he's going down. It's just a matter of how many members of The Shield he will take down with him. I love that line. Ryback and Curtis Axel beat Miz and Kofi Kingston. Don't even ask me. I don't know. I don't care. Neither did the fans. It looks like Miz, in fact, may not have turned heel like we all thought. It may just be a competitive feud between two babyfaces, which is fine, except that that would mean Miz is still a babyface, and that's not the role for him. They had a match with Titus O'Neil and Antonio Cesaro, teasing that Titus may vomit again like he did on SmackDown the week before. I find vomiting on TV disgusting. Vince McMahon finds it funny. I don't. So I changed the channel. I didn't watch the match. Main event segment was the contract signing for the title unification at TLC. They did a fan vote. They said, what would you like the Unified Championship to be called? Do you want it to be the Unified Champion? Do you prefer the Undisputed WWE Champion? Or do you prefer the Undisputed World Heavyweight Champion? And the fans voted, I think, 38% to 31, I think, or something like that, for Unified Champion. As though your vote actually matters. So cute. Go back and listen to the audio of that Triple H interview I played to open the sound off episode 303. What did he keep calling it? He said, we want to crown an undisputed WWE champion. That's what it's going to be, folks. Even if they call it Unified Champion right out of the gate, it's going to end up being the undisputed WWE champion. So, Triple H is out there with Stephanie. They spoke for a little bit. Triple H talked about how, finally, we have two men worthy of being in a championship unification match. That's what he said. Why don't they just hang signs on Daniel Bryan and Alberto Del Rio from around their necks that say, I suck? What a stupid thing to say. John Cena grabbed the microphone. He talked about Randy Orton never living up to his potential. Which is kind of true, I guess, if you count the suspensions and stuff. But in the context of a storyline, since that's what we're watching on TV here, nobody would know about that. All the suspensions and his bad behavior in the past. All they know is that Randy Orton is a 10-time WWE champion. Or a 10-time world champion. I don't even know how they differentiate the two. But he's held the world title of, in some form or fashion, at least 10 times in his career. Which means it made absolutely no sense at all for John Cena to say that he hasn't lived up to his potential. If 10 world titles and tag team titles and intercontinental titles, and I think he won the Rumble in like 09 or something, WrestleMania main events, I mean, if all that stuff means you haven't lived up to your potential, then boy, they're setting pretty high expectations. They're setting the bar very high for actually living up to your potential. I could probably count on one hand then the number of people in WWE who have actually lived up to their potential over the years. You know, I know titles, right now, they're trying to make the unified title. They're going to try to make it a big deal and all that. But up to this point, titles have meant nothing in WWE. That's hopefully part of the reason why they're doing this. The hope is that with one you know, unified championship. It'll actually mean something, and it'll be made to really feel special. But up to this point, they've meant dick in WWE. And this whole storyline, it hasn't even been about the championship. I think some people forget that the title, up to now, has taken a back seat. Everything's taken a back seat to this idea that it's about who the face of WWE is. And I laugh because why would the fans even care? Why do I care who the face of WWE is? It's like they're having some sort of beauty contest. Who's the prettiest guy in WWE? Who's got the prettier face, John Cena or Randy Orton? I don't give a shit. Who cares who the face of the company is? I care about titles. I want to see two guys who hate each other. This guy fucked the other guy's girlfriend. So they're going to have a feud. He's going to kick his ass. Great. I'd love to see that. I don't care who the face of the company is. But this has been the main storyline now for so many months. The whole company, Raw, everything has been built around this now for so many months. And even here in this segment, I think that's really what John Cena was trying to get at here by talking about how Orton's never lived up to his potential. Titles and accomplishments and WrestleMania main events, all that stuff takes a backseat to who the face of the company is. And I go back to what I said before. Who cares? Why should the fans care about that? Nobody cares who the face of the company is. Vince McMahon cares about the face of the company. Fine. But that shouldn't be what these guys are fighting about, because the fans don't care. And that's why people don't buy your pay-per-views, and they can't buy into this and invest in this BS. And that's why you feel the need to have to just unify these titles and try to make it into a big deal, because you're so desperate for people to actually care about this. But it's very simple. Just give them a reason to care. Who the face of the company is, that's not a reason for people to care. Hopefully unifying the title will rectify all of this. It'll be about the championship going forward. They'll get away from this whole face of the company crap, and we can finally move on. And they had a good brawl, I will say. When the segment was over, they both signed the contract. I enjoyed the little mini brawl, the little mini match they had when it was over. Cena ended up putting Orton through a table and posed with both belts. So they had to get their shot, I guess, for their promo package of John Cena holding up both belts, since Randy Orton had his moment the week before, standing tall over Cena with both titles. So they got that here. And I will say this, okay, as much as I'm not really digging the storyline, whatever you may think about the match, and I'm not enamored with another John Cena-Randy Orton match, I know they haven't wrestled in like 3 or 4 years. It's still fresh in my mind, all of those matches, to the point where they had to have a match on TV once with the stipulation that this was it. Like, we promise you, no more matches with these two guys. And for the most part, they've lived up to their word, for the most part. But to me, it's still not the kind of match that should be your big main event in 2013 when all these other guys are just itching. You know, they're itching for a spot in the main event. But, I do think John Cena and Randy Orton will steal the show at TLC. They have had some very good matches in the past. I was a fan of their, I think it was I Quit at Breaking Point 4 years ago. I think the month after that they had an Iron Man match. I didn't think that was a bad match at all. That was one of the better Iron Man matches, I felt, in WWE. They've had good matches before. I don't think this pay-per-view will be any different. I think if you're looking for a really good main event, I think you're going to get that. I'm not going to tell you to order the pay-per-view. I cannot in good conscience recommend that people order TLC. I'm not going to tell you not to, but after the last 3 or 4 shows, I cannot in good conscience offer any recommendations on how you should spend your money when it comes to WWE pay-per-views, because they have given you and me and everybody else no good reason to have any faith in them at all. But I do think you're going to get a really good match in the main event. The TLC lineup as it stands now, the unification match, Cena vs. Orton, Punk and the Shield in a handicap match, Bryan against the Wyatt family in a handicap match. Remember what I said when this whole storyline started? McMahon-Helmsley regime all over again. Handicap hell. Intercontinental Championship on the line. Big E Langston defends against Damian Sandow. Divas title on the line. AJ Lee defends against Natalya. And they may add Cody and Goldust against Ryback and Curtis Axel for the tag team titles if they have not already. That's what I have read over the last few days. I know they want the main event to stand out on its own. I really think they're making a mistake, I should say, by not giving us an old-school tag team TLC match like the Edge and Christian, Hardys, Dudleys matches back in the day. I'm not saying they should go out there and kill themselves, but you've got a lot of really good tag teams. They're really beefing up the tag team division these days. It's about as strong as it's been in a number of years. you can't tell me that the Rhodes against the Shield, against the Usos, and maybe throw in the Real Americans would not be a kick-ass match. I know the Shield is busy with Punk now, but they should have had some sort of TLC tag team title match on this show, and it's too bad they're not. NXT, still the best show going on wrestling each week, at least the last couple of weeks. This is actually the third straight week, I think, that NXT has really been very, very enjoyable. Some weeks, they're kind of in like a transition period. They're waiting for the next set of tapings for something big to happen or something. But the last three episodes are worth going out of your way to watch. I've had people who have thanked me for turning them on to NXT because I've been raving about it for so long. I did that Layfield Report column a couple of weeks ago about it. And some people have asked me, well, I don't know where to begin. I can't tell you an exact date or an exact episode. There's been a lot of really good stuff over the last 2 or 3 months that I've seen. I'd say go back to the Sami Zayn, Antonio Cesaro 2 out of 3 falls match, which was probably two and a half months ago. But I think if you just go back a month, if you want to get yourself acclimated to the characters and the storylines and see some good stuff, I'd go back a month and then pick up from there. That would be my recommendation. Again, the show is now free. It used to be you had to pay for Hulu Plus to get it. You can get it on Hulu for free. There is no excuse for you not to check it out. Paige beat Natalya to retain her NXT Women's Championship. Natalya making a visit to NXT. Really, really good match. They went about 10 minutes or so, which is long, even for an NXT Divas match. If you only watch Natalya on Total Divas and the occasional Raw match, you're really missing out because she showed here why she's the best wrestler they have in the Divas division. And she helped give Paige probably her best match yet, the best match that I've seen with Paige in it, on NXT. I just wish the announcers would shut up with the twerking stuff already. That's the one criticism I have about this match. Had nothing to do with the match itself, but the announcers went on this whole tangent about twerking. And you know, JBL talks about it on Raw, and Cole will bring it up. It's like, I mean, God, whatever the latest, like, fad is or trend, if it's twerking or what was the one before twerking? There was something else. Was it the Harlem Shake or something? They take something and they just beat it to death. It's like you find a rabbit, like a little bunny rabbit, right? And it looks all cute and everything, and they pick it up and they pet it and they nurture it. Oh, look at the bunny rabbit. It's so good. But then they squeeze it. They squeeze it until its fucking eyeballs start bugging out of its head. And then it's dead because you squeeze the life out of it. You took something that was good and fun and you just kill it. And that's what they do when it comes to this stuff. Enough with the twerking already. It's not funny. It's not cool. It doesn't make you look any more cool. Just enough already. I think I may have watched a different version of the show this week because from other reviews I've seen, there was some backstage stuff with Alexander Rusev and Tyler Breeze and then Mojo Rawley later on that was not in the episode that I watched. Although I do admit, I didn't watch it through Hulu this week. I wanted to watch it on my bus ride home from work. And I grabbed it from YouTube, so that may have had something to do with it. Aiden English sang for us again and then beat a jobber whose name they never mentioned. No idea who the guy was. The thing with Aiden English is they need to start giving him actual opponents, kind of like EC3 in TNA. You can only feed a guy jobbers for so long before it gets old. I also thought it was hilarious when the announcers started talking about how Aiden English is on a hot streak when the last time we saw him, he lost to Adrian Neville. And not long before that, he lost to Rob Van Dam. And the only guys he's beaten are job guys. So how hot of a streak is he really on? Let's be honest here. Antonio Cesaro came out wearing a suit. He stood on stage. He apologized to Byron Saxton. Byron Saxton is part-time ring announcer, part-time play-by-play guy, part-time wrestler, too. Remember, he was on one of the early NXT seasons back when it was only a season and not a developmental territory. So Byron this week was on commentary, and the announcers for NXT, they're kind of sitting in the back of their little arena like they did during that period of Raw where Eric Bischoff was the GM. They had the announcers not at ringside but in the back of the arena, like Taz and TNA on Impact now. So Byron's sitting there. He's looking over at Cesaro, very, very, what's the right word I'm looking for? Apprehensive, let's say, because he doesn't necessarily buy into this apology. But Cesaro feels sorry. You know, last week he took out his aggression on Byron Saxton, who was just a lowly ring announcer. Byron made the mistake of picking up the flag that Cesaro threw into the ring. He just picked it up to remove it, and Cesaro went all apeshit on him. So he said, Byron, come on over here. I want to apologize to you face to face. So Byron comes over, And he reluctantly shakes Antonio's hand. Antonio says, "And now what I want you to do is I want you to join me in a chant of We the People." And he, you know, Cesaro goes, "We the People." Byron Saxton wants nothing to do with this. He doesn't want to do it. Cesaro starts to get angry, and then he grabs him. And this whole thing was, Cesaro, it was almost like he was setting a trap. He was waiting for William Regal, who made the save the week before. Regal was on commentary with Saxton. When he saw what was happening, he got up from the desk, he went over, he dragged Byron out of the ring, and he saved him. Well, Regal wasn't on commentary this week, but I guess Cesaro figured he's in the back somewhere, and he's waiting. You could see he's looking back. He's waiting for Regal to come out and make the saves, probably so he can kick his ass. Regal never shows up. Regal is not there, or he is, but he leaves Byron Saxton to die, whatever the case may be. He didn't fall for Cesaro's plot. And Cesaro slaps Byron in the face, leaves him laying on the ramp. I like this. It's like the slow burn, right? I say this a lot. You don't need every single guy on every single show. Back in the day, whether you were a big star or even a mid-card guy, not everybody would always appear on the same show. But back then, most shows were only an hour, so you only had so much time. But I like the fact that Regal didn't come out here on this show. They're doing the slow burn. And eventually it's going to build to what I'm sure is going to be an awesome match between Regal and Cesaro. So how can I complain? We got a .com video from last week, footage of Sami Zayn backstage after his loss to Adrian Neville. Very upset, obviously, that he is not the number one contender for the NXT title. Leo Kruger ends up blindsiding him out of nowhere, leaves Sami laying. Tyson Kidd appeared on the show this week. His wife wrestled earlier, so I guess why not have him wrestle too? Alex Riley made reference to how much like Eddie Guerrero Tyson was looking like here. And I have to agree, you know, the tights, the longer hair, the taped fists. Tyson Kidd was giving off kind of an Eddie Guerrero vibe here on this show. He beat Leo Kruger after Sami Zayn ran out for the distraction. Now, we just got done seeing the backstage segment from last week where Kruger attacked Zayn. So it makes sense that Zayn would come out here for revenge, right? Well, the announcers must not see those segments. They probably insert them after the fact because Alex Riley couldn't understand why Sami Zayn would do this. He said he's just being a sore loser. And neither Tom Phillips, who came out to replace Byron Saxton on commentary after the previous segment, neither Tom Phillips nor Renee Young jumped to Sami's defense. So this was a bit of lazy production here. I guess, like I said, they inserted that segment, but nobody bothered to clue in the announcers to that. Main event was Bo Dallas defending his NXT title against the man that gravity forgot, Adrian Neville. Alex Riley was super annoying on this show. He said that nickname makes no sense because what goes up must come down. So Adrian Neville is more like the man that gravity forgot before he came down and then gravity remembered him. Shut up, Alex Riley. This was a good match. I love how Bo Dallas gets all exasperated when he's, you know, he can't put his opponent away. Keeps getting near falls, and he's losing it. But then all of a sudden, he'll flash this cheesy smile just to remind us of his, you know, the over-the-top babyface part of his character. He even screams, "Don't stop believing," at one point during this match before attempting to drive his knees down onto Adrian Neville from the ropes. Neville rolled out of the way. And Adrian Neville went for his red arrow. Bo Dallas rolls out to safety. And so Adrian Neville decides instead he's going to do a crossbody off the top rope down onto Bo Dallas on the outside. Death-defying move. Referee is counting. Adrian Neville pulls himself back in at the count of nine. And Bo Dallas, seeing this, wisely decides to fall back down to the floor and takes the count-out loss to retain his championship. Classic mistake by Adrian Neville, you see. He should have rolled Bo Dallas inside. See, a good champion would do that. That's the difference between being a challenger and being a champion. So, it was a count-out finish, but I thought it worked. It was fine. I didn't mind it. Another good show. NXT on quite the roll lately. Go ahead and check it out. And if you don't know where to start, like I said before, go back about a month. I think that's enough time. Month and a half, maybe. And start from there, and you'll get all caught up on the characters and the stories. And aside from some minor annoyances like the ones I mentioned this week, it's a great show. You'll enjoy it. Quick update on Sami Callihan, who is now Solomon Crowe down in NXT. WWE.com actually just put a video up in the last couple of hours, I noticed. I know there was a photo of Sami as the Solomon Crowe character floating around on Twitter. But now there's a video up of his debut at an NXT event this past week. Kalisto, who some of you may remember as the former Samurai del Sol on the independent scene, Kalisto was attacked by Solomon Crowe at a recent event, and apparently his new character, Solomon Crowe, is something of a hacker. He's like this insane hacker-type person. The lights went out, they came back on. Kalisto had been in the ring. When the lights came back on, Kalisto was down and standing over him with a tablet in his hand, which he apparently used. I don't know if he used the tablet to actually knock out Kalisto, but I guess the idea is that he used it to kill the lights. He controls the lights in the arena with his iPad or whatever the hell it is. And neither man has popped up yet on the NXT TV show, but if they have a gimmick for Sami Callihan now, if this is it, and we already know the guy's a good wrestler, I would guess that it probably won't be very long before we see him on NXT TV. Who knows? Maybe at the next batch of tapings he pops up. So that was just a quick update on him. Impact Wrestling. I only finished Impact literally 10 minutes before I started recording here this morning. I've just been way behind over the last few days, but I wanted to get through Impact here for this show. So I'm just going to barrel through this really quickly. If you're a huge TNA fan, I apologize for the brevity of this review. But the key things on this show, Magnus beat Kurt Angle to advance to the finals of the TNA title tournament. He beat Kurt Angle in a pretty good last man standing match. Obviously, I've seen Kurt have better matches with Bobby Roode, but it was a good match, and Bobby Roode actually did interfere. There was some chicanery there, towards the end, and Roode attacked Kurt. That's why Kurt couldn't get up at the count of 10, so Magnus won. Magnus and Jeff Hardy had a stare down. They will compete, I believe, in 2 weeks at the Final Resolution episode of Impact in the finals of the TNA title tournament, and I'm going to talk more about that in a little bit. I'll have some spoiler stuff to get into here, but that was the key thing from this show. We had Jeff Hardy, who beat Bobby Roode in a tables match to open the show, which is how Hardy got his spot in the finals. Also, a pretty good match. Bobby Roode was freaking out in a backstage segment later on about how, I'm a professional wrestler, and all I did was slip and fall through a table off the apron. I shouldn't, have to be put through this. I'm a wrestler. I'm here to wrestle. All valid points, by the way. But nonetheless, he did lose. So it's Hardy and Magnus. We had Ethan Carter still facing nobodies. He wrestled, if you can call it that, Earl Hebner this week. More like threatened. He told Earl Hebner to get down on the ground. He pinned him with one finger on his chest, and he had Earl's son, Brian, make the fall. Count the fall, I should say. This was a waste of a segment. We had Bad Influence showing us a video they taped. They went to the offices of what they thought was the offices of Park and Parks, because they're on a mission now. They want to expose the fact that this guy isn't who he says he is. Joseph Park is not Joseph Park. Joseph Park is, in fact, Abyss. So they flew themselves to Chicago to go to his law offices, and they get to this building, and there's this secretary who seems to be sitting in a hallway somewhere. And they say to her, where's Suite 204, whatever the number was. And she's like, oh, no, you can't go in there, And they go in there, and it's an empty office. It's like somebody moved out. And it turns out that there was a doctor who occupied that office up until a couple of months ago. And she looked it up on her computer. Park and Parker, as she called it, this woman. Parks and Parks. So they can't even get that right. Was, in fact, a law firm at one point, but they have not occupied that suite for 13 years. Which is more than the entire existence of TNA. Since TNA started in 2002, that would take us back to 2000. There has not been a Park and Park law firm there for well over a decade. And Joseph Park is in the ring with these guys. He's got a very somber look on his face, and he takes the mic and he goes, guys, as human beings, I'm asking you, please, just leave me alone. And of course they don't. They continue to bully him. Kazarian spits in his face, like when Randy Orton spat in Mick Foley's face that one time. It's very disgusting. Eric Young eventually came out to make the save after they started kicking Joe Park's ass, and he made a tag match for next week. It'll be Joe Park and Eric Young against Kazarian and Daniels. And Kazarian and Daniels are great in their roles. Joseph Park is great as this. You just feel so sorry for the guy when you watch this. He just seems like such a nice guy, why are these guys bullying him? On such a basic level, this story works for me. Like, I want badly to see Daniels and Kazarian get their asses handed to them because of the way they're treating this poor guy. But obviously, this is building to the ultimate reveal. They've been building to it for 18 months now, but it's coming sooner rather than later. I don't know if it's on the next show or when it's going to be, but I'm very, very sad that they appear, anyway, to be writing off the Joseph Park character. I know some people are sick and tired of it, but I like the character. I wish they could find a way to keep it around somehow. Doesn't look like it's in the cards, though. They had a segment, a pre-tape segment, with Sam Shaw out on a dinner date with Christy Hemme. She excused her, maybe it was lunch, she excused herself to go use the ladies' room, and as Sam Shaw is filling out the check, the waiter comes over to collect it, and he grabs the waiter's arm, and he says, you know, I saw the way you were looking at my girlfriend there, and, you know, if you keep doing that, what did he say, actually? He had, like, a knife in his hand when he said it. He said he was going to, did he say he was going to kill him? I don't remember what he said exactly. He threatened the guy. He threatened the guy. The guy looked very scared. He walked away. Christy returned, and Sam Shaw was like, oh, you know, great, let's go, let's leave. So I'm digging it. I'm digging it. He's playing this, you know, sadistic kind of character. I thought his acting here was fine, very limited. I mean, it was a short segment, but I thought for what this was, they've got me interested in the Sam Shaw character. Sting was on this show. I'm not quite sure why. He didn't really do anything. He was in a couple of backstage segments. He gave Magnus a pep talk and said how proud he is of him. Later on, Sting tried to meet with Kurt Angle, but Rockstar Spud wouldn't let him into Kurt Angle's office. Rockstar Spud didn't even recognize who he was without his face paint. And Sting's response to this was, I'm Sting, you know, you've heard my albums. So, Sting's great. So yeah, this went nowhere. That was really all Sting did on this entire show. The storyline about Impact this week, the main storyline was, Dixie Carter was waiting for her championship belt to be returned to her. AJ Styles was supposed to be FedExing, I guess, his championship belt back to Dixie. So the whole show, she's waiting for this package and waiting and waiting and waiting. And the big payoff came at the very end. Finally, the box arrives. Her package arrives. And when she opens the package up, it's a toy title belt. And she freaks out. She has a really, and when I say bad, I mean acting-wise, a very bad meltdown at the end. Just, it was a bad segment. Earlier on, we also had Dixie backstage with the roster announcing that next week there would be a Feast or Fired match. So she had all the briefcases. Somebody's going to win a world title shot. Wouldn't be surprised if it was EC3 because, you know, he deserves one. Somebody will win an X Division title shot. Somebody's going to get a tag team title shot. And somebody who picks the wrong briefcase will get fired. And my guess is it'll probably end up being Chavo Guerrero who gets fired, because when was the last time Chavo did anything on Impact anyway? And if Chavo got fired, I don't think anybody would even notice. We had Gail Kim beat Laura Dennis as her open challenge continues. Lauren Dennis, known as Cherry Bomb, is an indie female worker. So Gail Kim won that match. ODB came out at the end to attack her and Lady Tappa, and that was pretty much how that segment ended. We had the Bromans on this show, beating James Storm and Gunner as the tension between Storm and Gunner continues to boil over. And what happened here is that Gunner was blinded. Robbie E. spit beer in his face, and Gunner was very pissed off about this, went after Robbie, distracting the referee in the process as James Storm was attempting to go for a pinfall. And so then Gunner threw the referee out of the ring, and they got disqualified, and James Storm was pissed off. So, again, this is building, obviously, to a breakup between the two of them, which could be a good thing, I suppose, for James Storm if the idea is to start promoting him as a singles again. If not, I don't know what you do with the guy. I mean, he's certainly fallen off from where he used to be in that company. Maybe the idea is that Gunner is the one to go heel instead of James Storm. Maybe nobody goes heel. I don't know what the idea is. But if you break him up, I hope they have a plan for James Storm, because it certainly seemed like a long stretch of time went by where they didn't know what to do with the guy, and they kind of fell into this whole Gunstorm tag team deal. So we'll see where they go with that. And that was pretty much the entire show. I talked about the Angle Magnus main event. That's the finals of the TNA title tournament with him and Jeff Hardy, which leads me into some spoiler notes. So you have been warned. If you do not want to know anything that happens on some of the upcoming episodes of Impact over the next month or so, I'm not getting into all the spoilers here, just some of the key stuff. And I'm also going to kill a Jeff Hardy rumor. If you don't want to know any of this, skip ahead by a few minutes. If you're still with me here, I'm sure many of you have heard by now that Magnus is the new TNA World Heavyweight Champion. He does go on to beat Jeff Hardy in the finals of the TNA title tournament, which airs in a couple of weeks. My first thought was that they, you know, would then build to a title unification with him and AJ Styles at some point. Early next year, AJ would eventually come back. They'd have a match to find out who the real TNA champion is. This is all assuming that AJ Styles either signs or has already signed a new contract. I'm not sure that he has. But then I got a note from somebody, one of my listeners, saying that at the most recent taping they did on Thursday, Magnus has a match with AJ Styles, and he beat him. He beat AJ Styles in a no DQ match to unify the titles and to become the undisputed, I guess, TNA World Heavyweight Champion. And I saw that, and I'm like, boy, that was quick. Apparently there were a shitload of run-ins from Sting and Bad Influence and Heel Dixie. Everybody got involved. Of course there was a fuck finish. Bobby Roode attacked AJ Styles. Magnus pinned him. And then after the match, and I don't know if this is going to air on TV or not, but AJ Styles got on the microphone. He thanked the fans. He said whether or not he stays in TNA or he leaves, the fans will always be a part of him. He said, storyline or not, Dixie can forget about me, but I will never forget about you, the fans. It just read like this big farewell speech, and it screams angle to me. I will assume it's an angle until I see or hear evidence to the contrary. But I wasn't there, so who knows how it actually came off. I'm just reading, you know, the text of what he said. To do Magnus versus Styles this early, though, tells me that, you know, maybe he really hasn't signed a new contract yet. I mean, I'm all for giving Magnus a shot. He's young. He's somebody new at the top. But we just had the storyline of AJ Styles waiting an entire year to win the title. They just did a long title chase with this guy, and to take the title off him so soon afterwards, I don't know. Until someone tells me otherwise, I have to think he's staying. He's the heart and soul of that company. I doubt that WWE is taking him, if he were available. I mean, where else is the guy going to go? On the Jeff Hardy thing I mentioned, yeah, there's a rumor circulating that Jeff is done with TNA and possibly headed back to WWE. Not true. They're taping stuff out of order, so I don't know exactly when this will air. I think it may be the day after Christmas that this may air on TV, but they taped the match pitting EC3, Rockstar Spud, and the Bromans against Sting and Jeff Hardy in what else? A handicap match. The heel authority figure putting the top baby faces in handicap matches. I wonder where I've seen this before. Anyway, after the match, Jeff Hardy gets on the microphone and he says he's tired of the mess that TNA has become. He's done. He is done until things change. And we're not going to see him again. And then he just walks out. And Sting tries to talk him out of it. Hardy leaves anyway. He's not going back to WWE. Okay, not now anyway. I mean, who knows years from now. TNA has its annual tour of the UK coming up next month. And Hardy, because he's a convicted felon, is barred from traveling over to the UK. Remember the tour they did earlier this year? That whole debacle where for months they were advertising that Jeff Hardy was going to be there even though they knew he wasn't? He was the TNA World Heavyweight Champion at the time. And then at the last minute, they, you know, somebody realized, oh shit, you know, our champion isn't allowed on the tour. And so they filmed an injury angle and they debooked him, which was a really shitty way to treat their fans over there who paid for a ticket thinking that Jeff Hardy would be there. At least this time they know better, so I'm sure that's all that this is. It's an angle to explain his absence for the next month or two. He'll be back. He is not leaving. Not now, anyway. So I just wanted to put that to rest. Let's move on to the mailbag here. If you have questions for me, you can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Send me audio questions, too, if you have any. About 30 seconds or so in length, MP3 format only, and always include the text of your question in the email as well, or I will not use it. And please include your name and where you're from. That goes for anybody who emails me. Siv from Baltimore, one of our longtime listeners, writes in, not with a question, but he has a comment. He says, I just wanted to take a moment to give you kudos on your recommendations. I think you and I are similar in age and grew up watching WWF at the same time, so it makes sense that our tastes are similar. For example, Bob Holly's book, excellent choice. I am writing you to let you know that last night I finally made the time to sit down and watch NXT. And wow, it was great. It really gave me a taste of old school WWF before they got all cutesy and corporate. I will definitely be tuning in again and regret not having done so sooner. In fact, it will make Raw even harder to watch, knowing how much better the product has the potential to be. Paige also makes it very easy to want to tune in. Well, that she does. I have to agree with Siv on that. And I've gotten a lot of emails like that one. I said that earlier from people who really weren't paying any attention to NXT or maybe just didn't know about it. And they've started watching it and they really enjoy it. So if you're a fan of wrestling but not so much a fan of what you're seeing on Monday nights, give it a shot. I think it may be something that you like. Doug writes in, okay, so they went to build to a unification match at TLC and nobody believes it because it's a B show. Here's my question. Why not? Look at this from a pure buy rate perspective. It's hard to get buys this day and age with the internet being so big. The Royal Rumble always gets buys because it's unique. WrestleMania always gets buys because it's WrestleMania. Why wouldn't you put this big match on a filler show like TLC and make it, or try to make it, feel like a big event instead of blowing it on a show that will do big business anyway? As I said to Doug in my email back to him, it's a nice idea in theory, and who knows, maybe it'll work. You know, maybe they'll get a big number for TLC. Although, they've done themselves no favors scaring off customers after the last three or four pay-per-views. But they have tried this before, and it does not work. Years ago, they brought back Stone Cold Steve Austin to be the guest referee for a title match. I think it was Batista and Jericho at a Cyber Sunday show. And that show still did horrendous business. Steve Austin being on that show did nothing. You know, it kind of worked. You could argue with Brock Lesnar when he came back and wrestled John Cena at Extreme Rules last year, but even that show didn't do great numbers. I'm all for making the B-shows feel special, but a match like this, you know, they're billing it 11 years in the making. I can see where people would think a match like that belongs on WrestleMania because we're so close to the show anyway. It's like we're almost there. You can't hold off a few more months, but they're doing it now. Oliver Davis writes in, longtime listener, since BMJ before Michael Jackson. I like that. I'd like to know your thoughts on WWE celebrating its own milestone with their new DVD, History of WWE, 50 Years of Sports Entertainment. I felt it was superficial and airbrushed. Some bits understandably, others because of petty real-life feuds. Here comes the cheap plug. I wrote a review of it over on the website I co-edit. That's flickeringmyth.com, by the way, if you want to check out Oliver's review. He says, keep up the great work, and I'm loving the This Week in Wrestling History segment. It boggles my mind how much research you must do for it. I appreciate that. I'd say it's about half and half. A lot of that stuff comes from memory. Other parts of it, absolutely, there's a decent amount of research I spend my time doing. But I enjoy it. And, you know, come next June, we're going to have to come up with a different segment because it'll be a year since I started it. And I don't want to start repeating the same events that I already talked about. But we have some time before we get there. I have not seen the 50-year anniversary DVD yet. I have heard they skipped a lot of stuff, which is to be expected. I mean, you can't expect them to condense 50 years of history into a 2 or 3 hour documentary, whatever it is. I heard they downplayed Stone Cold Steve Austin a bit on the DVD. I don't know if Oliver would agree with that or not. If that's true, that would bother me. You know, he wasn't on top for as long as guys like Hogan and Cena. But I don't know how you could ever downplay the impact that Steve Austin had on that company. So I'm sure it is their airbrushed version of history. A lot of these DVDs are. I think they talk about the steroid trial in 94. I can only imagine what their version of events is as far as that goes. I might have to watch the DVD just for that chapter alone. Hitten writes in, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, H-I-T-E-N. I stumbled onto your Sound Off several weeks ago and have been listening ever since. I have also been listening to Sound Offs from 2010 and am really growing into a fan. Love the work you do. Some background on me. I was born and raised in Tanzania in Africa and have been a regular wrestling watcher since about 2003 because of unstable broadcasting in Tanzania. I've been in Canada for college the last 2 years. I was wondering what your views are on Ken Shamrock and his decline in his years of professional wrestling. I've been watching Raws and pay-per-views from the late 90s, and I like how his coming to WWF was built up with Jim Ross claiming it would lead us into the 21st century. Whenever I hear of the Bret Hart vs. Steve Austin WrestleMania match, I never hear mention of Shamrock as the guest referee. What do you think caused this decline? You know, that's a really good question. I always liked Ken Shamrock. I thought he was one of the more underutilized guys they brought in, and you know, can never understand why he never had a shot as champion, even for a limited amount of time, because he had the pedigree. He was a tough guy. You know, he came from that world of mixed martial arts and the UFC, and he had that reputation as the world's most dangerous man and all that kind of stuff. And he was a good wrestler, too. I mean, some people may not realize this, that Shamrock had a pro wrestling background long before he ever came to WWE. He was doing pro wrestling as early as, you know, the early part of the mid-90s. It wasn't like he came in as a rookie and knew nothing about pro wrestling in 1997. So he came in, and he also introduced this idea of tapping. Because before Ken Shamrock came along, when you put a submission maneuver on somebody, the referee would call for the bell after the guy would say to him, "I give up," right? That's how it was done. When Shamrock came in and he started using the ankle lock, he started tapping people out and they started using that word. And now nobody gives up anymore. Unless it's an I quit match and they quit on the microphone. Nobody quits. Nobody says I give up. It's all tapping. Oh, he tapped out. And Shamrock deserves a lot of credit for that, because it wasn't until he and his character came along on TV that this company started using this whole notion of tapping. So he's kind of an innovator in that way. But he would do things in there that were very impressive. He was a big guy. You know, he was jacked. He was very strong. But he could bust out, you know, a standing hurricanrana on somebody. And he was very quick and very fast. And I thought he was a good wrestler. I really did. He wasn't bad. It wasn't like, oh, this guy coming from another sport, he sucks or anything like that. He was actually really good. And one of my favorite Shamrock memories, one of my favorite Shamrock moments, and I don't ever want to see anybody take a shot like this again, but it's one of those things, if you could find it on YouTube somewhere, and I'm sure it's floating around out there, even just the clip, not the whole match. I don't remember if Shamrock was in a match. I just remember him wearing sweatpants. He's in the ring. He's down on his knees. This was during the period of time, probably early 98, cusp of the Attitude Era, when he was feuding with The Rock. And he's telling The Rock, come on, hit me. Rock has a steel chair in his hand. I think the entire nation is in the ring. And Shamrock has given him a free shot with the chair. He says, come on, hit me. And The Rock just, I mean, he wails back and he smacks Ken Shamrock, not in the head, in the face, right across the face with a steel chair. And it's one of the most brutal things I've ever seen. I'm sure it was done safe enough. It's not like Shamrock came up bleeding and, you know, broken bones and a broken nose. I still, to this day, I have not been smartened up as far as how they were able to pull that off. It looks absolutely brutal. It's one of the most brutal chair shots I've ever seen in professional wrestling. And Shamrock took it like a champ. I don't think there are very many people on that roster who would have agreed to take a shot the way he did in that segment there. So that's one of my favorite Ken Shamrock memories. I don't need to see people getting hit in the face with steel chairs now. But, yeah, I agree. I don't know what would account... This decline that you mentioned, I don't know if you mean a decline in his ability, a decline in his push. I was always of the belief that it was a money issue when his contract came due and he decided to leave and go back to pursue a career in MMA. I don't know if there was some sort of underlying political issue that, you know, held him down if he would have gotten up higher. My sense of it was I don't think they ever really planned on him being a world champion or being a truly top guy. And they didn't do him any favors. If anything, I think they misused him. And the reason I say that is because Shamrock was a legit badass. He was a legit tough guy. Look at the background he came from. He was like a street fighter. He was a champion in the UFC. And, you know, he was a scary dude. So he comes in, and it didn't take very long. It took maybe a matter of months before he just became another guy on the roster. He was just another pro wrestler who he'd be in there, let's say, with a guy who was half his size, not nearly as tough, and the guy would throw, you know, his work punches and kicks and everything, and Shamrock would have to sell for him. And I feel like there had to have been a way, a better way for you to handle his character where he could have still been looked at as this legit badass. But they never treated him like it. They just treated him like anybody else, and it just looked goofy to me. You have this guy who would go in there and have these cage fights with these guys, but now he's having trouble in a match with D'Lo Brown. Like it didn't make sense to me. So I feel like they could have done a better job with that. They could have done a job with Shamrock back then, like they do now with Brock Lesnar. And Brock Lesnar will have to sell. I mean, he had a match with CM Punk, in my opinion, the match of the year in WWE, and he had a sell for Punk, who's a much smaller guy, but I feel like the way they book Brock is very smart, and it works. He's still booked like a badass. It still means something when when Brock Lesnar shows up. He's a big, scary dude. Shamrock may not have looked as big and scary as Brock, but he was also a big, scary dude, and they never really treated him that way, and I think that is part of what led to his downfall. He could have been a lot bigger than he was in that company, but I think he was misused in that way. Bobby says, I'm starting to notice a certain theme in WWE regarding heel champions cutting promos, and it's starting to annoy me. We just saw it with Randy Orton, where heel champions say, I'm the best wrestler in the business, I'm better than blank. Then they rattle off a list of WWE legends, and I have to wonder why they are bringing up wrestlers from yesteryear, guys that haven't been active in over 15 years. It's almost like, hey, since no wrestlers are over today, let me name off some from 15 years ago who don't wrestle anymore, who were over back then. What are your thoughts on this? I agree. It's an overused heel tactic, but all it does is just remind us of all the great guys they don't have anymore. Every time they do one of these segments where they mention Hogan, Austin, Bruno, Brett, Shawn, Edge, it's like, oh my God, like, what happened? Like, what happened to all those great guys? And they need to script these heels now to worry less about being better than Hogan or Austin and just worry about being the best now. Because the bar is much lower today than it was back then. Being champion means less now than it did 15 years ago. You know, maybe after they unify the titles, that'll change. But I agree, it's silly. I don't recall Bret Hart as a heel in the late 90s when he was the WWF champion on the microphone talking about how much better he was than Bruno Sammartino or Billy Graham, which would have been the generation of guys that preceded them. I do remember The Rock as a heel imitating people's catchphrases like Hogan and Savage, I think when he was in the corporation, but that was done for comedy. That was different, you know. Plus, they were in a war with WCW back then. Those guys were on the other show. That's the only reason they did that. But other than that, I can't remember guys back then when they used to cut promos doing that. And there were, you know, the promo cutters, they had some good guys who would cut promos back then. They didn't have to rely on name-dropping Bruno and Billy Graham and Bob Backlund and Andre the Giant and all these different people. So, yeah. I agree with you on that. Do you think Kona Crush missed the main event bus by just a few seconds? The minute you hear Brock Lesnar's theme, pay-per-view sales go up. Well, that's not necessarily true anymore. Some say Brock is a unique draw. He brings legitimacy to his matches. Brock reminds me a lot of Kona Crush. Crush had that technical fighting style like Brock, and he also had that freakish strength. Crush spoke with intensity. He was probably not creative enough with his promos, but he was a good talker. Crush had all the necessary tools. He did great as an upper card heel during his dark purple outfit days. What kept him from becoming a main event guy like Brock Lesnar? Was it the arrest incident? Or was it that the click was too powerful back then? The arrest incident that this person who left no name is referring to was a weapons charge. I think in the period from when he left as Kona Crush to when he came back. No, I take that back. When he left, he was already a heel. He had gone heel. He was managed by Mr. Fuji, right? So from the period he left and then he came back again in 96, he was arrested on a weapons charge. And they actually referred to that on TV. So they were referring to him as this dangerous convict. And I remember they did angles with Crush when he first came back in 96 where he would beat up fans. They would plant these people in the audience and he beat up a few fans. So that is true. That is legit. But I don't think that had anything to do with it. It's not like if Crush didn't get arrested in the period that he wasn't in the company, that he would have been a world champion. I like the Kona Crush character. Crush was fine. Crush, to me, was not a main eventer. He just wasn't at that level. There are some guys that are at that level. He was not one of them. I never looked at Crush as being a good talker. He was acceptable. He really wasn't that good. As far as comparing him to Brock Lesnar, you're the first person I've ever heard draw that comparison. I have never, ever, not even one time, thought to myself, you know, Brock Lesnar kind of reminds me of Kona Crush. The only thing those two guys have in common to me is that they were really strong. Crush was a strong guy. Brock, of course, is also a strong guy. But that's where the comparisons end for me. Yeah, the technical fighting skill. You know, Crush may have been proficient in some martial arts. He may have been. I don't know. I kind of picked up on that in his wrestling style. He was a fine wrestler. The thing with Kona Crush when he was the babyface wearing the orange and the purple, I remember when he feuded with Shawn Michaels for the Intercontinental title. Yeah, it looked cool when you're in the ring with a guy like Shawn Michaels who's so much smaller and he would press slam him over his head and kind of throw him around like a rag doll and Shawn would sell for him. It made Crush look good. But yeah, that's kind of where it started and ended with Crush. I mean, I never looked at him as being an overly great, like, this guy, they got to do something with this guy. I never did. I never really looked at him that way. He was fine, but he wasn't exceptional in any way. I could probably, if I really sat here and thought about it, I could make a list of 10 names from that period who probably deserved a lot better than what they got and could have been in either a world champion or a main event position, but weren't. I don't know that Crush would be on that list. If he was, he'd probably be behind those 10 guys. Jamie writes in, if you were a pro wrestler, would you rather be a former world heavyweight champion who held the title for a couple of months and had an okay run, or would you rather be a contender for the greatest wrestler to never win the title? So I'm pretty much asking you, would you rather be The Miz or Mr. Perfect? And I know that is not the best comparison. No, it really is not the best comparison. I think being the champion and having a decent run, you use the word decent, probably means more money and more main events for me. So, yeah, more TV time on top of the card. So I'd go with that. That would be my preference. And to be fair, if I were Miz, I'd have Maurice, so that wouldn't be such a bad thing. That doesn't mean guys like Perfect and DiBiase didn't have great Hall of Fame careers. They're remembered very fondly by people. But I don't want to be remembered as the guy who should have made it but never did. I would take the title over that. Tejas, I just wanted your thoughts so far on Season 4 of Walking Dead. I know you watch it, but you hardly ever talk about it. I think this season has been good but kind of slow at first. Season 3 was much better. I get a lot of emails about Walking Dead asking me my comments, and I have been a fan of Season 4. It was slow in parts, but I've enjoyed it so far, and I think, you know, with what we got there at the end, it more than made up for some of those slower episodes. And there was a lot of hate out there, I noticed, for those two. Now, this is a little bit of a spoiler, not much of one, but if you're not caught up on Walking Dead this season, you might want to skip this part, so I just wanted to throw that in there. But we had two episodes prior to the end of the first half here that just ended. The show comes back in February. That were entirely dedicated to the governor and giving us background into what the governor has been up to ever since we lost him last season. He disappeared. We didn't know where he went, who he was with. So they had these two episodes in there to give us a breather from the main stuff going on at the prison. And just to show us a little bit more, I think a bit of a glimpse into the guy's soul and what makes him tick. And again, what he's been up to and the people he's befriended. And there were a lot of people out there who hated those episodes and said, oh, you know, what's going on at the prison? Who cares about this? Or I hate the governor. Rah, rah, rah. I don't know how you can hate the governor. I mean, you can hate the governor's character. He's an asshole. You want him to die. But as a character, I loved it. I loved the governor character. They had to do what they did to him. They had no choice. It was time. I get that. But I'm really sad that we're not going to see him anymore because I really enjoyed David Morrissey's portrayal as the governor. And I never read the comics, and maybe I will get around to doing so when The Walking Dead is over, whenever that may be, because I don't see this show ending anytime soon. They still get, they do gangbuster ratings for this show. But I almost feel like now, because a lot of the storylines from what I've heard mirror what you see in the comics, they do deviate from them. Not every story is the same, but there are a lot of similarities, and I just don't want to be, I don't want to know. I just want to go into it fresh and see it on TV first, being that I'm so invested in the show. So I haven't read the comics. I know the governor character is apparently way more sinister in the comics. But I love David Morrissey's portrayal. I think he's a great actor. I love his portrayal of the character. I'm sad to see him go. And I love those two episodes. I loved it. I just thought you had to do it, too, because the character had been gone for so long. Some people may have forgotten about him and forgotten his story. Maybe there's newer fans of the show who didn't even have a concept of this governor character. And even the ones who did, even the longtime fans of the show, I feel like it meant more what happened in that last episode, in the finale that we just saw, given what we saw in those two episodes. The fact that we saw the human side of him. I mean, in one scene, he's trying to grab, he's risking his own life to grab an oxygen tank to save an old man who ends up dying anyway. All these little things, they put that in there for a reason. It wasn't just to waste our time. And then he befriends this family, and he befriends this little girl who obviously he's projecting onto her. He's you know, not thinking that she's his daughter, but obviously he couldn't save his daughter. Well, I'm not going to let the same thing happen to you, which is funny because it does. All of these different things that made us care. These SOBs somehow found a way to make me care on a personal level about the governor and start to feel sympathy for him and think to myself, you know what? Maybe he's not such a bad guy after all. Maybe there's a way that he could somehow coexist in this world with Rick and the other people. And then there was that one episode where the wheels just fell off the wagon, you know, with the golf club to that guy, and he just starts killing people indiscriminately again. And there was that one moment in the show where he kind of realized that, okay, these people can't guarantee the safety of these new people that I consider my family. And that's when the switch flipped. Because I wonder, you know, if I forgot the guy's name already, the first guy he killed, but, you know, if that guy had said to him, you know what, I'm going to help keep this camp safe, then I think everything would have been fine. But the minute that he realizes, okay, this guy is weak, he can't do shit to help us, that's when he went on this killing rampage, and he said, you know what, I'm going to be the governor again. I'm the guy in charge. I'm calling the shots. We're taking that prison, and that's the end of it. And that's when he just completely went off the rails. And, you know, we saw the ultimate evil in this guy's character in those last couple of episodes. And I loved it. And I think those two episodes, the departure from what was going on at the prison, were key in getting you into the mindset that, you know what, this guy's no different than he was before. He's still the same sick asshole who deserves to die. And it was to remind us of that. And also, I think, to make us care a little bit, maybe, about those new characters that we were introduced to, so they weren't just a bunch of nameless, faceless bodies who got killed. A lot of people got killed in that finale, and they weren't all from Rick's camp. They were from the other camp, too. We at least knew the names of some of these people. We knew a little bit about them, so we cared maybe a little bit more than we would have otherwise. So those episodes existed for a reason. I liked them. I don't get all the hate for them. I think it's just people hating for the sake of hating. It's like the same people who hate on Halloween 3 because it had nothing to do with Michael Myers, when if they actually watched the damn movie, I think they'd actually enjoy it. And now I've gone on entirely too long about The Walking Dead, but it's my show, so I can do that. Last question here. Michael, from Glasgow, Scotland. Did you see SmackDown this week? They aired a segment called This Week in SmackDown History, which was a throwback to old matches in the same week in the past. Is this a new thing or something I have been ignorant to? What are your thoughts? Also, any thoughts as to where Walking Dead will go after the midseason finale? Well, I already talked about that. I don't know where it's going to go. I don't have no idea where it's going. I don't want to know where it's going. I'm going to enjoy the ride. This week in SmackDown history, that's interesting. See, they're finding out the same thing I'm finding out. It's fun to look back on the history of wrestling. It's a lot more fun than some of the things we get these days. So I must have missed that segment. I didn't see it. That sounds to me like it's a new thing. If we have any regular SmackDown watchers here, I guess you guys can chime in and let me know. I'm guessing it's a new thing they just started. And that's actually really cool. And speaking of this week in history,
history has been made here!
Now that was a great segue. This week in history, 26 years ago, on December 7th, 1987, WWE taped an episode of Saturday Night's Main Event that would not air on NBC until after New Year's, which included one of my earliest wrestling memories, Hulk Hogan getting choked out by Andre the Giant after successfully defending his title against King Kong Bundy. I don't know if I mentioned this before, but Hogan wins the match. Andre was out there because Andre and Bundy, they were both, you know, managed by Bobby Heenan, who did everything in his power to take out Hulk Hogan unsuccessfully, time after time after time. And so Hogan beats Bundy. He's in the ring posing. Andre comes into the ring, grabs Hogan with these giant hands and just wraps them around his neck and starts choking the life out of him. And I thought, as this naive young wrestling fan back in the day, that Hogan was in this great state of distress, and I was appalled by this. I thought he was killing the guy. He's choking the life out of him. Hogan's fading. He's fallen down. All the baby faces came out to try to pull Andre off. The Bulldogs came out. Andre just kind of, you know, he threw them both over the top rope like sacks of garbage. And it took Hacksaw Jim Duggan breaking a 2x4 over Andre's back, which didn't even hurt him. It just kind of got his attention, and they were finally able to pull Hogan to safety after a few minutes. So yeah, one of my earliest, if not my earliest, wrestling memory is of that angle from that show. Even though I'm pretty sure I started watching wrestling a little bit before that. But one of my earliest memories, 26 years ago this week, 22 years ago this week, on December 3rd, 1991, WWE held a pay-per-view called This Tuesday in Texas from the Freeman Coliseum in San Antonio, Texas. This was a failed experiment. This was WWE's attempt to milk as much money out of its pay-per-view audience as it could. And they tried a Tuesday night pay-per-view, and it did not work. It was coming off Survivor Series, I think, the week before. I'm not sure why they made Ric Flair and Roddy Piper. They had a dark match on this pay-per-view. I mean, it wasn't even on the pay-per-view. They had a dark match at this taping, which I had not been aware of until recently. And I'm not sure why they wouldn't have aired that, because neither guy had a match on the show. Flair came out to interfere in the main event, but that was it. And that seems like a match that probably would have gotten people to... I think that match, coupled with Hogan versus Undertaker for the vacant... for the title, it wasn't vacant at that point, and the Savage-Jake match, that's three big matches right there. I think it was a mistake not to put Flair and Piper on the show. But this was the Jake Roberts-Randy Savage show. I know Hulk Hogan used ashes from the Undertaker's urn to beat him and win back his championship, and that led to the title being declared vacant, and that's why the title was on the line in the 1992 Royal Rumble match for the first and only time in history. But I make no bones about the fact that Jake the Snake and Randy Savage had, in my opinion, the best feud, my favorite feud, in WWE. I shouldn't say the best feud, because there's been a lot of great feuds. Austin McMahon, Rock Austin. I mean, there's been a lot of great ones, but among the better ones, if not one of the best, and easily one of the most underrated, is Jake Roberts and Randy Savage. It's underrated in part because it didn't go on long enough. There's a lot of people who may not even know the two of them even had a feud at the time, in late 91 into the early part of 92. And this was the first match in that feud. They only had two matches on TV, this and the blow-off, which came a few months later. And this was the first match. The match itself is not great. I'm not going to pretend like it's this great wrestling match. It's not. It went 5 minutes. That's it. And Jake couldn't do much. Jake, you know, after the neck injury he suffered years earlier, when Honky Tonk Man broke a guitar over his head, that I don't know if the guitar was gimmicked, and that kind of fucked up Jake's neck, and then he had to get neck surgery later on, took a year off, came back. Physically, Jake could only do so much. And like I said, 5 minutes. The match didn't go that long. The match was really, really short and very abrupt. And I guess in part because of the post-match angle that they did. And that's really what I'm referring to here. I love this. This post-match angle was awesome. The promos that both these guys cut were awesome. And we saw, you know, Jake slapped Elizabeth across the face, which was just something you didn't see back then in WWE anyway. The pre-match promo. Jake cut a pre-match promo backstage, and he used the line, and I wrote it down here in my notes, so I remember it, but it's from a Pink Floyd song, which makes it that much more awesome, from the song One of My Turns. It's this line, cold as a razor blade, tight as a tourniquet, like the skin on a dying man. And he used that line in his promo, even though he kind of messed it up. You know, he said tight as a turning key instead of tourniquet, but it still sounded sinister coming from Jake. And after the post-match angle where he assaults Elizabeth and the president comes out, Jack Tunney and all the referees, they take Jake to the back. Savage, who was beaten down now, is leaving with his wife. Gorilla Monsoon on commentary. Oh, you can see her face is already swelling, even though you didn't see any swelling. But Monsoon could do a great job of selling it as though, you know, her face actually was swelling. And then the backstage promos where Jake was talking about how he, you know, he got off on putting his hands on Elizabeth, and Mean Gene was repulsed, and Savage was just a madman. If you've never seen this show, it's not a great show, but watch the Jake Macho Man stuff. The match itself is nothing much, but the pre-match, the match, the post-match, the promos, everything together is what I love about pro wrestling. And I still maintain they blew this feud off way too quickly. The payoff should have been a WrestleMania 8, but that's neither here nor there. 16 years ago this week, on December 7th, 1997, WWF held its Degeneration X In Your House pay-per-view, 1 month after the Montreal Screwjob. Did you know that Butterbean competed in a WWE ring long before he ever knocked out Bart Gunn? In spectacular fashion, I might add, at WrestleMania 15. Indeed he did. He competed against Marvelous Mark Mero in a tough man boxing match on this show. He won by DQ after Mero gave him a low blow. I got to be honest with you, I have no recollection of this whatsoever. I remember a lot of the other things from this pay-per-view. I'm able to go off memory with this. But when I looked up the card and I saw Butterbean versus Mark Mero, I had no idea. I have no memory of Butterbean doing this. I just remember the Bart Gunn stuff. So this was all new to me. But apparently he won by DQ because he got hit in the nuts by Mark Mero. So there you go. What I do remember was the main event, Shawn Michaels against Ken Shamrock for the WWF title. Or more specifically, what happened after the match was over. Shamrock won by DQ after Triple H and China interfered. And afterwards, we saw the shocking return of Owen Hart for the first time since his brother got screwed over the month before. He came out of the crowd. He violently knocked Shawn Michaels off the ring apron through the announce table. He pounced on him. He beat the crap out of him. The sad thing is that all this did was build to a match on Monday Night Raw a few weeks later. I mean, this could have been a pay-per-view program between Shawn Michaels and Owen Hart. Now, Michaels would have gone over. I would not have put the title on Owen, nor do I think they would have. But instead, what they did was they blew it off on Raw, and they transitioned Owen instead into a feud with Triple H for the European title. I mean, why would you do that? Why not save the first Shawn Michaels versus Owen Hart match, playing off everything that happened with his brother in Montreal and everything else? It'd be the biggest push Owen ever got since, you know, the initial sibling rivalry stuff with Bret years earlier. And there's a personal issue there, right? There's a personal issue that people could buy into. People could buy into the fact that Owen Hart really hates this guy's guts and he's defending his family's honor. You play off that reality. I mean, that makes for some of the best feuds and some of the best matches. Why not save that match for the Royal Rumble? I never understood that. Instead, they went back to the Undertaker-Shawn Michaels feud, which had already run its course. It already played itself out. Those two guys had two pay-per-view matches together, back-to-back, Ground Zero, and the very memorable Hell in a Cell match at Bad Blood. Both of which, actually, I shouldn't say both of which. I don't know who won that first match. It might have been Undertaker by DQ. But the Hell in a Cell thing was about as big of a blow-off as you could have. Michaels won. There was a lot of screwy stuff that happened. Kane interfered. Undertaker already transitioned into a feud with his brother. He didn't want to wrestle Kane, and it took a few months, but then he accepted his challenge. They were already doing Undertaker and Kane stuff. So why go back to Michaels versus Undertaker for the third time in a random casket match, which made no sense, when you could have done Shawn versus Owen? And think about this, if that casket match doesn't happen, Shawn Michaels doesn't suffer that back injury that put him on the shelf for 4 years. Had they booked this thing logically, who knows what the Attitude Era would have looked like if Shawn had stuck around as an in-ring performer. 7 years ago this week, on December 3rd, 2006, ECW's December to Dismember pay-per-view. This was the WWE version of ECW. I think it's important to make that clear. One of the worst pay-per-views that WWE has ever produced. I can't say the worst, because some of those early In Your House shows back in 95 were pretty bad. But this was way up there. Thankfully, not too many people saw it. The show did the lowest pay-per-view buy rate for WWE ever. Only 55,000 domestically. 90,000 people worldwide saw this show. It also marked the demise of Paul Heyman, who had high hopes for that ECW relaunch. Quickly butted heads with Vince McMahon. They had some shouting matches when it came to this show in particular. And Heyman was against the idea of putting the ECW title on Bobby Lashley. That was Vince McMahon's idea all the way. Heyman's idea, as he outlined in an interview that he did later on after he left, was to take ECW's fastest rising star, CM Punk, and turn him into a player, a real player in one night. Have him and Big Show. Big Show was the ECW champion at the time, and Big Show also was on his way out. He was hurting. Big Show was hurting big time. And he left the company shortly thereafter, but Heyman's idea was to take Punk, take Big Show, in this, what they called an extreme elimination chamber, have them start the match, and have Punk, in like the first minute and a half, beat Big Show with the Anaconda Vice, tap out the Giant with his signature submission hold in the first, like, 90 seconds of the match. And Heyman even said Big Show was totally on board with the idea. He was cool with it. He would have loved to put Punk over and make him a star. You know, Heyman probably sold him on it, because Heyman and Big Show, they were legit, you know, good friends. Big Show had no problem with it. But Vince McMahon was adamantly against the idea. And he got what he wanted, and it was clearly not what the fans wanted. In fact, not only did Punk not win the title, they booked it so that he was the first person eliminated in the match. The same guy who only a couple of weeks earlier at Survivor Series was on the same team with DX and had the entire crowd chanting his name, to the point where Triple H had no choice but to acknowledge it. But that's WWE for you. You're gonna take the medicine that we give you, and you're gonna like it, even if you're not sick and you don't need it. So after the pay-per-view, they announced that Heyman had been sent home. I think it may have been a storyline thing, but in reality, he really was gone. And we would not see Paul Heyman on WWE TV again for another 6 years. The opening match was probably the saving grace of this show. A really good match with the Hardys going over on Eminem, John Morrison, and Joey Mercury. The rest of the card until the main event was just total filler. You know, the Chamber match had Lashley beating Big Show, Punk, Rob Van Dam, Hardcore Holly, and Test to become the ECW champion. Lashley was going to be Vince McMahon's next big thing. You know, he put him in that Battle of the Billionaires match a few months later at WrestleMania. And what ended up happening? He left to go do MMA. Oh, well. Pay-per-view also ended over half an hour early, which may be acceptable on a UFC pay-per-view with real fights. Although even then, I mean, at least they fill time with undercard matches from earlier in the night that didn't air, if they have time, like dead time at the end of the show to fill. In pro wrestling with fixed matches, there is absolutely no excuse for something like that. If I paid for a pay-per-view that's supposed to be 3 hours and it went 2 hours and 20 minutes, I'd be pissed off. So that was just another reason that people were angry about this show. 4 years ago this week, finally, December 5th, 2009, TNA made the announcement that it would be going head-to-head with Monday Night Raw with a three-hour live impact on January 4th. Dixie Carter posted on Twitter, "Hogan to debut January 4 in a live three-hour impact special up against Raw. How's that for a first shot? Spread the word." It made for a hell of a first shot, but then the gun jammed, and we all know what happened after that. They debuted Jeff Hardy and Hulk Hogan on that first show. They threw everything into that first live show. They did like a 1.7 rating. It was the best rating Impact ever did. And for one night anyway, it almost, not quite, but almost, felt like the Monday Night Wars again. They recaptured a little tiny bit of that magic. And part of that was that it also drove me crazy to have to keep flipping, because on Raw they had the return of Bret Hart for the first time. It's like his first Raw appearance in 12 years. And I'm flipping between Raw and Impact. And then I realized what I hated about Raw and Nitro back in the day was having to flip. And back then, there was no DVR like there is today. Then TNA ended up moving Impact to Mondays, I think about a month or so later. And they got slaughtered. And they had to crawl back to Thursdays. And you know what? They tried. It didn't work, but they tried. It'd be nice to have someone who could really give WWE a nice, swift kick in the ass. But unfortunately, TNA is not going to be that company. And that was this week in wrestling history. If you have questions for the mailbag, thesolemonster @gmail.com is the email address to send to. You can follow me on Twitter, @solemonster is my handle. We're all over Facebook. We have a group if you want to apply for membership there. We have an official YouTube channel as well. Search out the name of the show. Search out my name, The Solemonster. And please subscribe to us there. We have well over 5,000 subscribers on YouTube and counting. Hopefully you are one of them. And do us all a favor. Stream the show on Stitcher every now and then. You know, throw us on your Stitcher playlist if you have one. We're always, in the sports chart mix there on Stitcher, and that's pretty cool. Hopefully we can climb up even a little bit higher. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes as well, for those of you who it works for. Again, I apologize if you are one of the people who has issues when it comes to the podcast app on your iDevice, doing the best I can. But there are no shortage of ways for you to either download or stream this podcast. You have no excuse not to listen to this show. If one method doesn't work, there's always a second and third. And please consider making a PayPal donation to the show here this holiday season. TheSolemonster.com is always the place to do that. And I can't impress upon you enough how much that is appreciated by me and how much it helps keep this show going. Keeps me motivated to keep doing the show, knowing that you guys enjoy it that much. One last reminder, I did a 90-minute special Q&A for the TV Tracks channel, TRAX, on YouTube. You can look it up. If it's not up by the time you listen to this, it will be going up any day now. Trax has been a big supporter of this show. They have a big subscriber base. They've helped spread the word of the Sound Off. I can't tell you how many new listeners and Twitter followers and people are now following me in the show because of his support. So give his channel a look. Check out that video when it's up. It's like a bonus Sound Off. It's all mailbag questions. I talk a myriad of different subjects. I enjoy doing it. And I likely will be doing similar things on our YouTube channel. Calling them YouTube Inbox, where I take mailbag questions that maybe I can't get to on this show, and maybe I do them in some YouTube video installments on our own channel, which is another reason for you to subscribe to us there as well. We'll be back next weekend. I guess we'll have TLC preview and predictions next weekend. Yet another pay-per-view coming up. That'll be episode 305. So until next time, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a good week, and we will see you right back here next time. Take care, guys.
You've been listening to the Sala Monster Sounds Off, giving you the good.
Because I'm the man!
You don't shut your mouth, I am going to punch you in the face.
The bad.
You're going to prove to the world that all you are is a B-plus player.
And the ugly.
And then Hogan announces that he's going to defend the championship, Bully Ray is, against the same Sting who just 3 months ago lost a match where if he lost, he can never again get another title shot. What in the fuck just happened?
Well, mostly the good.
Break with Ace's name. I got to get rid of this mess. I got to get out of this club. This club sucks.
The Monster Sounds Off.
Since 2007, on thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, and iTunes, The Sala Monster Sounds Off.